You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning, this is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to Los Angeles, LATalkRadio.com, and the Maria Sanchez Show. It's Monday, April 22nd, and it is my esteemed honor and privilege and pleasure to be here with you and hopefully guide you through your mornings as you get to work, on your way to work, whether you're home or in your car. Because of the internet radio being what it is these days, there are free apps that you can get for your iPhone or your Android by going to iTunes for starters, latalkradio.com. You can download that so that you can listen no matter where you go, so you don't have any excuse not to start your day with us. There's also on the website, latalkradio.com and the Maria Sanchez Show.com, you can listen live while we're broadcast, and then we will repeat the episode several times within the 24 hours, or you can download the podcast. So it's all right there at your fingertips. Our number in studio, if you'd like to join in the conversation at any time, is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Why don't you just put it on speed dial now so that you can join us at your convenience. We're going to be live Monday through Friday from 9 to 9:50 every morning Pacific time. I'd like to thank Sam and the folks here at LA Talk Radio for giving us the opportunity to be live with you. I'm going to share with you a little bit about who Maria Sanchez is and what the Maria Sanchez Show is all about, so you know what to expect as we move forward. I've been a talk radio host for 20 years. I got my start at KFI AM 640. That is either the one or two number listened to show in or station in the country. And from there, I had different incarnations of broadcasts. I started on KFI as a fill-in weekend host, then got the opportunity to be a permanent weekend host on Saturday and Sunday with the privilege of filling in Monday through Friday for the stalwarts that some of whom are still there, Bill Handel in the mornings and John and Ken in the afternoons, filled in for Wayne Resnick and Phil Hendry. So that was how I cut my teeth with talk radio. From there, I got a full-time opportunity in Sacramento. I was on the air from 9 to noon. I was in direct competition with Rush Limbaugh, who also started at the sister station there in Sacramento. And we held our own. And at that point, I was commuting to Northern California weekly. I had remarried, and I had four children, and had a nanny. And because I would broadcast via remote on Monday and Friday mornings, and then I'd grab a plane on Monday afternoons, or usually Monday after dinner, feeding the family. I have four children. And then I'd fly back on Thursday after my broadcast. This is pre-911, so it was a lot easier to do this back then. Pick my family up from school on Thursday afternoon, do the normal thing, and start all over again the next week. it was arduous and exhausting and exhilarating and fabulous. And we were doing homework by fax and prayers by phone. And after about a year of doing that, I thought to myself, you know, I didn't have four children to delegate their being raised by a nanny. And I had remarried, and so I had a new marriage. And it was like, so I was gone for the majority of the week. So this is where the adage comes in for you can have it all, you just can't have it all at once for a lot of women. So I decided that it was time for me to focus on the family. So my broadcast career has been intermittent in some regards because, one, I was a single mother for a fair amount of time, and then, two, I put my family as a priority. And so I always had my finger in the pie, sometimes as an independent contractor, sometimes as a consultant, sometimes as fill-ins. My degrees are in public relations and human resources, so I've been a communicator, public relations, public affairs, marketing, that sort of thing. Radio, however, is my true love. And that's why I'm so privileged and proud to be able to be back on the airwaves and be in front of a mic. You have no idea what this means to me. So the other reason I love radio so much is it's immediate. What you see is what you get. What you hear is what is happening. There isn't consensus. There isn't standards and practices. There isn't a producer, there isn't an executive producer who tells you, no, you can't do this, and no, you can't do that, and, oh, you know, we've got this guest schedule, but guess what? There's breaking news, so what do? We shift gears and we go with the breaking news. That's what I love about radio. It's response to what's going on. Unlike television is what I'm trying to say, where you shoot something and then you edit it and then you have to have focus groups and the final product comes out months later, feature films maybe a year later. Radios today. So here it is, Monday, April 22nd. What we're going to do with the Maria Sanchez Show. So my career didn't end in Sacramento. I co-hosted and co-created a local program for an NPR affiliate and co-anchored that. I had a morning drive radio program, which was my real love. That was from 6 to 9 a.m., the Maria Sanchez Show. And Sam just asked me, wow, that's awful early. And I was like, yeah, it was awful early, but you're helping folks get into their day, find out what's going on while they were sleeping, and kind of set the pulse for them for their mornings. And our habits in the morning are much more rigid and structured than at any other time in our day, especially during the work week. That station went Spanish, so I got an afternoon drive radio program, and that was from 3 to 6 o'clock. And that was good, too. Because you kind of let the people know what happened when they've been out and busy, and you kind of digest the news of the day. The nice thing about afternoons is if something happened during the day, you have an opportunity to reach out to that person or that organization to get somebody on your show to talk about it. So, and then the economy hit. The recession started August 2008. I was off the air at 6 o'clock, and, you know, it's like 6 o'clock, 6:00, and into the studio walks the program director, my boss, and the HR gal. And I took my headphones off, and I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, what have I done? What have I said? Ooh, there must be something bad. So they came in. They had their documents prepared. I had never been let go in my entire life in any capacity. And they said, Maria, we see that the economy's turning. We need to let your program go kind of on hiatus, is how they suggested it might be. We save your salary and your benefits. We take in syndicated programming, which we don't have to pay for. They give a minute or two to advertisers to barter, if you will. Here's a letter saying it had nothing to do with performance, professionalism, or ratings. Here's a letter that says that when the economy returns, we hope to have you back. And thank you. And I was like, I couldn't breathe for 48 hours, literally. It was all I could do to breathe. I was the single mother, head of household. My passion is gone. To this day, they still have that syndicated host that they replaced me with. Even though the economy is rebounding somewhat, I still was not able to get that position back. And so I've done different things in the meantime. I am a volunteer with the American Red Cross. I'm one of their communicators, both locally for disasters, and I've been deployed nationally as well. I'm a volunteer for the County of Ventura as a public information officer, and it's all the talking heads that represent the entities in the County of Ventura. We get together every 2 to 3 months to talk about what's going on with our various agencies. There's fire, there's police, there's public works, there's every city, there's county health, there's mental health. It's a great group of people. I do that on a volunteer basis. And then I volunteer for several entities in my community because philanthropy is something that I've always been drawn to. And it's a motto and a credo that I live by, that I think it's incumbent upon us all to make this world a better place and to pay it forward as often as possible. So one of the slogans that I love is, to whom much is given, much is expected. So that's one of the things that we're going to promote on the Maria Sanchez Show here on LARadio.com is philanthropy. There are so many nonprofits, 501c3s, that exist because they serve real needs. One of the things, if you are thinking about getting active or involved or volunteering, that you should pay attention to is, how do they conduct their business of philanthropy? Because if they're taking in $100 and they're spending $85 on their overhead, that is not an organization that I would recommend that you contribute to. In other words, 15 cents out of every donated dollar is going to actual services. That's one of the reasons that I adore the American Red Cross, is that 91 cents out of every donated dollar goes to services. Lean, mean, getting the money to where it needs to go. So there's an entity called Charity Navigator, and it answers to no one, and they assess charities and let you know what the bottom line is for that organization that you might be interested in. So before you give your time, your talents, and your money, I recommend that you get on charitynavigator.com. I don't have any interest in them, but that's what I did when I was looking. I was actually a director of development and communications with the American Red Cross right after I lost that one and only radio job. And I went on to Charity Navigator first to see just how efficient were they with the donated dollar. I think that's important, and I would strongly recommend that you do that too. So we will try and feature some philanthropic organization every day, give them their little 5 minutes to let you know what it is that they do, what they stand for, why they were created, and how you can help. So I can speak about Ventura County because that's basically my domicile. There are over 2,000 in the county alone. Obviously, they serve a need or else they wouldn't be in existence. So whatever your hobbies are, your likes are, your strengths are, your proclivities are, you can find an organization that you will be happy with because they're doing something that you care about. And to that end, the other thing that we're going to talk about every morning is the top five news stories that you should probably be aware of or be paying attention to. And we'll give you just a brief overview of them. And then we'll try and get into the news in a way where we can make it relevant to you, not just some talking points and press releases and sort of things. So to that end, there's a story. Of course, the biggest story is the Boston Marathon bombings. It was a week ago today. There's going to be a moment of silence in Boston at 2:50 Eastern Time, which if you're on the West Coast, that would be 11:50 Pacific. There was the London Marathon this weekend. They honored a moment of silence before they started. Happening right now is a funeral for the 29-year-old young lady, Crystal Campbell, who is the restaurant manager, who was killed during that horrific terrorist act. The other thing you should know is today's Earth Day. We'll go into a little bit about what does that mean, what is it. Also, 15,000 air traffic controllers were furloughed starting yesterday, so expect delays. As of this moment, 20% of the flights leaving or coming into LAX are being delayed, making more delays as the day goes on. Yesterday, it culminated in three-hour delays. Also, the March housing sales were flat, and that bummed out Wall Street, so it took a dive a little bit, but I think it's recovering now at this moment. And they're saying, why were they flat? Well, one, tight credit tight availability to credit and small inventory. So that's what you need to know in the news. But to make it a little bit more relatable, one of the stories in the news is that there are specially trained therapy dogs that have been deployed by the Lutheran Church Charities, and they're making bedside visits to the hospitalized victims of the Boston Marathon bombings. And these are dogs specifically trained to do this kind of therapy. Now, there are five therapy-trained dogs that have been deployed by the Lutheran Church Charities that are in Boston now. They're all Golden Retrievers. Three were flown from the Lutheran Church Charities headquarters near Chicago to Boston on Tuesday of last week. They joined two other Golden Retrievers who had already been on the East Coast. They'd been working with the pupils and the parents from the Sandy Hook Elementary disaster. And these five dogs and their handlers are spending the week, last week and this week if necessary, visiting the bombing survivors at Tufts Medical Center, Massachusetts General Hospital, and Brigham and Women's Hospital. So we're going to call a woman who works, and here we go, calling her right now, her name is Maria Tello, and she has worked with therapy dogs, and she's going to kind of give us an insight to what does it mean, how are they trained, and how have they been demonstrated to help those in need. So we're calling Maria Tello, and you're listening to LATalkRadio.com, TheMariaSanchezShow.com, and the time is 9:16 on Monday morning, April 22nd, and hopefully she's going to answer the phone. Maria is an uncanny. She's also, we met.
You have reached the Sprint voicemail box of 805.
Okay, so maybe she will call us back because she said she was going to be available at this time. Maria is a volunteer with the American Red Cross. She is bilingual. She's also a media person, having done radio and television as well. She teaches for the American Red Cross the first aid. She also teaches the courses for the communicators. In fact, I was one of her students with the American Red Cross. You have to take classes, and the just to get your certification, if you will, so that then you can be deployed because you've gone through their hoops, which is totally fine with me. That's quality training. So let me try her once more because she said she was there calling now. Yay, technology. Here we go. I'm going to call her once again. So Maria also teaches a CPR pet first aid class with the American Red Cross. And she knows all about disaster trainings, and she knows about dogs, and she knows about dog therapy. She actually did dog therapy.
Hello?
Maria, it's Maria Sanchez. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you for joining us this morning. I was just sharing with the listeners about your career and about what you've done with dogs. And would you let our listeners know first in general about trained dog therapy and what they do and how they're trained? And then we'll talk specifically about how they help make a difference.
Well, a trained therapy dog does work in hospitals and nursing homes, sometimes schools, just different settings where people may maybe needing the comfort of a dog. And mind you, there's also cats and horses that do this work. So it's varied. So those dogs are usually dogs. Well, as I was thinking about this, you need to really look at your dog and or your animal and see, does this dog kind of notice when someone's upset? Does it want to cuddle people? Does it want to be with somebody? We had a dog that seemed to instinctively know who might be dealing with something. Even if it was a cold, that dog would go to that person and stay by them. So some dogs are highly motivated by their nature to really want to be with people and take care of them.
So you're suggesting that dogs possess empathy?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that is something that they're born with, or is that something that you can teach?
I think, like with some people, you can teach it and you can be born with it. I prefer with my dogs, I had a dog who was not quite the opposite, but she was shyer, more reticent. I took the dog who really wanted to be with people, who really wanted to, who was more demonstrative, and I took him to the hospitals and nursing homes. She was so shy, even though she had those attributes, she was so shy, she really only wanted to be with me. Mm. So he did great work. He went to Calvary Real Estate Hospital before they closed, and he actually, there was a man there who was autistic. And when he would see my dog, who was half German Shepherd, he would start to talk. And they said once a month when we went there, that was the only time they heard him speaking.
Really?
So it was amazing. Just a very touching thing, and to see that the connection between this man and this dog. And I experienced that in many other occasions as we did this for years, going around to different facilities. But that was a striking incident. And it's so uplifting to be able to share your pet, your dog. And there's some training that you do need to go through.
So, Maria, are you suggesting to our listeners that if they possess a pet that happens to have these empathetic characteristics, that they might consider having their pet become a therapeutic animal?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we're seeing the work of dogs really, those doors are flinging open and people are really connecting. I met a young man just recently who was an Iraq war veteran, and he had a little dog with him, and he said, I need this dog because I feel safe when I'm with him. And you probably didn't feel this way before you went to war, but we're seeing dogs more and more fulfilling that capacity for people, that there's nothing like unconditional love, and you get that from your pets.
So, Maria, if somebody, you have to go through a certification, I would imagine, and it's the owner-handler that works with their own pet?
Yes.
Okay.
Generally speaking, you want your dog or your cat, but it's very rare that you see cats. So what you want to do is you want to make sure your dog is a big licker. And that sounds really odd, but if you go into a hospital and a dog licks one patient, and then he goes on and he licks the next patient, he may be transmitting diseases that, you don't want to do that. So you want to look at your dog's temperament. If he starts to lick, if you notice he's a licker, you want to start working to curb that. And then the AKC has a wonderful test called the Canine Good Citizenship Test, and that is a behavior test. It's not a really easy test, but it's good to get through that. And if you can go online to the AKC and read about it. There are 10 different things they have to do. One of them is to be able to leave your dog with a stranger and walk away for about 5 minutes and the dog not panic and whimper and all that. So there are some tests that they go through that you want to touch their paws and squeeze them, because patients will sometimes squeeze a dog's paw and it can cause some discomfort. You want to make sure your dog's going to react in a good way around that. So there are things that as you go through that test, you'll see what you're looking for. And then there's another group called the Delta Society, and on their webpage they talk about pet therapy dogs, and there's quite a lot of information. It's fulfilling. It's a wonderful thing to do with your pet. And bottom line, dogs want a job. And this is a great job for a great dog. And people need help.
Now, the story out of Boston is that the Lutheran Church Charities has 5 golden retrievers that are doing their work this last week with the Boston Marathon bombing. Are golden retrievers more inclined to this kind of therapy? Is that why you think they're deployed them? Because you mentioned that your dog was half German Shepherd.
My dog was half German Shepherd and half Collie. I think I have seen pit bulls do pet therapy. A wonderful little pit bull that we had. I've seen Yorkies. There are all kinds of dogs. I think you need to move past the breed and look at the personality and the ability for a dog to connect with people. Now, as a handler, you also have to remember that you're in charge of the dog, and there were times when my dog would actually get fatigued, and because I'm his handler, I have to take care of him. I would pull him back and let him take a break. So as a handler, you have some responsibilities, but really your obligation to taking care of your dog is very important.
So it's not just about them giving, it's about their needs being met too, and who better to know that than the person who is their companion?
Right, right. I worked with a group that came out of Riverside, although it's a nationally based group. They use all kinds of dogs for pet therapy and disaster work, which is what we're looking at in Boston. We saw this in Katrina. Unfortunately, I'm not able to recollect the name of that group at this point, but they had psychologists and clinicians involved, licensed clinicians involved with taking dogs out. So with a therapeutic model like that, it's really a therapist could really do a lot of work with the dog. We've seen a lot of these things over the years, all kinds of dogs. I recall a psychologist I knew who was talking to a young man who had been molested and grievously hurt, and he wouldn't tell the court what was going on. He wouldn't tell anybody what had happened, and they couldn't bring charges. But he told everything that happened to him to a little Dalmatian. So our dogs are the repositories of many, many secrets.
And do you know when this movement started? Because it used to be that pets were considered, you know, outdoor animals, and that they were there to protect the perimeter or to keep even wild animals away or whatever, and to have them be domesticated and bring them into our homes and into our beds and then hospitals. It seems like that's had to be a major shift in thinking at some point.
I'm going to say in the last 25 to 30 years, we've seen a greater shift and a greater understanding and maybe a more appreciation for what dogs need to do. And as we've become to live in cities more, the job of a dog has had to change. We're not on a farm, and we don't need the wolves to stay away from our mm-hmm. cattle. And we don't need, but those dogs at the same time still provide that kind of work. I had a border collie beagle who, and my mother had a daycare center, and he would herd up those kids because he knew, just like any sheep or geese or whatever he would have had to do had we lived on a farm, he had to take care of. These were the beings that he was in charge of to take care of, and no parent should come rushing those kids because he was very protective. So the dogs. Sensibilities have shifted to really being more hands-on, taking care of people, because we are their pack.
And so that they can adapt over time, like evolutionary, right? That they used to keep themselves in the pack, and then the humans joined them, and then now we're domesticating them. I think that's a cute story, that they kept the children in a pack.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's interesting about people? As people have evolved around pets, what I've noticed is in my lifetime, and I'm thinking the 50s and 60s, a dog was Spot, Rover, all those names. Well, what are their names now? Oh, this is my dog Anna. This is my dog Samantha. Mm-hmm. They have human names. Mm-hmm. They're really becoming a greater part of our family and being recognized because of the naming, and I find that fascinating, because I think it's more the humans who are evolving and recognizing that the dog needs to be part of the family and more included. So I like to say that the modern-day doghouse is three bedrooms, two baths, because they are in our homes, and when I see my kids say, well, I'm not going to sit there because the dog's lying on the couch, I'm going to go sit over here. You know, they have an equality that my parents would probably not appreciate, but I certainly love that my children are that way.
That's well said, because they say that there are furry family, and that it's generating billions of dollars that people are spending on them.
That's true, because in the economic downturn, the money that was spent on animals did not drop.
Interesting. Well, Maria, you've mentioned the Canine Good Citizen Test with the AKC, the Delta Society about Pet Therapy, a Riverside group. We'll put those links on our website so that if folks are listening and they want to know more, that they can do that. And I want to thank you for your call and your time, Maria Tello. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Welcome to LATalkRadio.com and the Maria Sanchez Show. The time is 9:30. It's Monday, April 22nd, and we're going to answer the phone here, 818-602-4929. Good morning. You're on with Maria Sanchez.
Good morning, Maria. This is Tawny Gomes.
Gomes. There you go. Tawny, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to shift gears now. Tawny Gomes is a marathon runner. And, Tawny, I'm not going to give you our listeners your resume because I would really like you to do it. And she's not bragging, but she has a lot to be proud of. But the reason that we're ultimately speaking with Tawny this morning is Tawny was at the Boston Marathon last Monday, as was her boyfriend. And we're going to go into that story. So she has first-hand accounts of what went on. And I thought another way to bring this national story local with a local woman. But, Tawny, would you please share with our listeners, first of all, about your miraculous transformation with your body and your health?
Oh, thank you, Maria. Well, the Reader's Digest version is in 1996, I weighed 300 pounds and was on a lot of medication for various health issues. And I was initially inspired by Oprah and started my lifestyle change very, very, very slowly, very, very, very gradually. And, you know, today in 2013, I have completed 130 marathons, one Ironman, and two ultra marathons. So lots and lots and lots of hard work, no surgery, and just lifestyle changes.
Now, so, can you share what you weigh now or how much you lost? Or
25.
I'm sorry?
125.
You lost 125?
No, I weigh 125.
You weigh 125? You lost 175 pounds.
Yes, I have.
Oh, my goodness. Tawny.
Yes.
You lost...
And it's, you know, it's really about keeping it off. I think we've all lost weight a million times, right?
Right. And it finds us again.
It's, well, yeah, it finds us, and it's about really creating a lifestyle, and that's that has just been the huge difference because, like everybody, you know, I mean, I did every single diet back then because this is 1996, 1997, so it's not as popular. I mean, it's popular now, but back then I had just started the initial consultations on gastric bypass surgery, which was really new back then, but that's how drastic, you know, I was. It's like I just need someone to staple my stomach and staple my mouth shut. But thankfully, you know, I found another way. So.
Well, and as an aside to our listeners, Tawny Gomes is our guest this morning on the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Radio, to LATalkRadio.com. Tawny's going to be our lifestyle correspondent. So today, if you can believe it, of course, there's a story in the news that comes out of Stanford Medical School, and it's about tackling diet and exercise at the same time to lose weight. And we won't go into it today because we've got a bigger story that you're going to share with us. But when those kinds of studies come out, Tawny's going to come on and kind of disseminate it for us and share maybe what your experience has been and whether or not you think, and again, you're not a physician, I should let everybody know that, but through hard work and personal experience, she's achieved a great amount of success. And how many times have you been on the Oprah Show?
Let's see, I think on five, and I was on there in the audience to help other people that I had coached probably another four or five times, but I think me personally, five.
Wow. So yeah. She's obviously inspired by you too, huh?
I hope. That'd be nice, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
A mutual. So, Tawny, take us to your trek to Boston. Not necessarily a week ago today when it all went down, but how did you guys go and why were you there and were you running and et cetera?
Yeah, we were there. I would love to run the Boston Marathon, and I certainly hope to do so next year. But the Boston Marathon is the Super Bowl in the Boston in the marathon world. You have to qualify to get there. And there's very strict time standards that you have to meet. And sadly, even after completing 130 marathons, I have not met those strict time qualifications. So the people that are actually running have already run a previous marathon in a certain amount of time, which is, you know, a tough thing to do. Again, it is the Super Bowl in the marathon world.
I had no idea.
Go ahead.
I had no idea, Tawny. It's
the Super Bowl. It's the World Cup in the marathon world.
Okay.
Okay. So I was there in a media capacity with my boyfriend who was working the medical tent, and I was there to support fellow runners from our running club, our local running club.
Which is?
Ventura Running Tribe.
Okay.
And I was there, there was about five of us, five in the club, and one specifically, she had tried for 5 years to qualify, and she finally made it. Again, this is a really big deal to make it to Boston. And unfortunately, she was my one lone runner that was not allowed to cross the finish line because she was 600 yards from the finish line, and they turned her back because of the bombings. So I finally saw her yesterday for the very first time. We reunited, and we got to kind of recount because I never got to – I mean, it was just so chaotic. I mean, she had texted me, I'm fine, are you fine? So I knew she was fine.
But wait, you got ahead of the story.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you and your boyfriend flew out. You were there in support of the five folks from the Ventura Running Tribe that had qualified for the Boston Marathon.
Correct.
And
yes,
you were where when
the – I was at the finish line, underneath the finish line time clock. Thank God I was to the left, my left, because I was facing the runners coming in. I was to the left of the finish line clock. The bomb was to my right.
Oh.
So I had already walked through four of my other runners. They had come. I had seen them cross the finish line. I walked them through to get their bagels and their fruit and their water. I had walked them all the way through the little maze after you finish, and I said to my friend, I said, I'm going to go back and get Stacy. I'll see you guys for dinner. And of course that never happened. So
what did you see?
The first bomb scared me. I went, you know, I kind of jumped, but I didn't know it was a bomb.
Right.
I saw the smoke. I was only 100 yards from the bomb. So what it sounded like to me, Maria, was it sounded like the cannon that goes off at the start of an Ironman. I was like, that's weird. They're shooting a cannon off. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I did not in any way, shape, or form think it was a bomb. And I was so fixed on runners coming in because I had gotten a text update. I was tracking my friend Stacy, so I knew she was due in any second. So while it startled me, the first one, I was like, woo! You know, and then I was very focused on the runners coming in. Where's Stacy?
No, can you take a sec? Did you see anything or you just heard?
No, I saw smoke.
Okay.
I definitely heard it. I saw smoke to my right.
Okay.
And then shortly thereafter, I don't know how long it's, you know, but shortly thereafter, the second one went off, and I certainly thought, well, I'll clean this up because of radio, but I thought, oh, my God, 9/11. That's exactly, I was like, and then the bleachers were emptying out. It was screaming. I ran to the first medical tent and crouched down because, again, I was still looking for Stacy, and I had gotten the text update that she was due. I looked at the finish line clock, and it was 4:09, and she heard the last text update I got. It said estimated time of finishing 4:11.
Oh, my.
So she missed it by the skin of her teeth. She was not allowed to finish. But I didn't know this at the time.
Right.
So I'm, like, crouched down, like, and it was weird, Maria. On some level, I was calm in that I said, well, I mean, can't be a bomb. I mean,
right.
We're at the finish. I mean, calm down. I said to myself, Tawny, calm down. It's some probably electrical thing. You need to calm down. And I was still very focused on looking for Stacy. Well, then they started moving all the barricades out so that the police cars and the ambulances could get through. And unfortunately, that's when I saw them wheeling in people that had been blown up and legs blown off and blood everywhere into the medical tent because I was crouched down by the medical tent.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the medical guys said, take him to the hospital. So then the ambulance kind of came up and they just whisked him away. And I was like, oh my God, this is really happening. I'm in 9/11. Then I panicked. Well, then by then, of course, everybody kind of knew, oh, my God, it is a bomb. Because, again, the first minute or two, you're like, what is going on?
Right. It's curious.
I mean,
it's...
you are certainly not thinking a bomb at the Boston Marathon. So then it was mass chaos. I mean, people, I'm getting trampled. I'm getting crowded. I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Now I'm crying. I'm like, oh, my God.
Well,
and I'm kind of claustrophobic anyway. And I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. And there was this really large African-American guy that had finished the marathon, and he was kind of where the tables used to be, where you get your water and your Gatorade and your bananas.
Mm-hmm.
And he was reciting the Lord's Prayer. And I thought, oh, my God, that's the prayer they say when you're going to die. And I just hung on to him, and I thought, well, he's really big. He can push through the, you know, he can push through the crowd.
Uh-huh.
So I just like latched onto him, kind of hunched over, and I thought,
wait, where were you going to go?
Well, I didn't know.
Right.
I just was like, they had shut down medical tent A because they thought that could be a target for the next bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police told us to get out of there. But I mean, I was like, I don't know. I'm just like following the herd of mob of people. Then they kind of, I just followed the herd, and then the police were all there, kind of trying to get people. It was, I mean, I know I'm not making sense because it was chaotic. Then, like shortly thereafter, they said, all right, everyone to the Fairmont Hotel. So we all kind of walked a block or whatever, and then that hotel remained in lockdown till about 9 p.m., the bomb went off at 2:50 p.m. Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
We were in lockdown till about 9 p.m. Eastern time. Unfortunately, where I was staying, the hotel that I was staying at, the subway stop was the JFK Library, which was the third bomb, which later they turned out it wasn't a bomb. But at the time, that was the third bomb. So there was no way I was going to get to my hotel because they they shut down the subway.
Now, you're listening to Tawny Gomes, who is a runner here from Southern California, who was at the Boston Marathon and who was there on Monday a week ago with the Boston Marathon bombings, and she's recounting what her experience was like. And, Tawny, again, thank you for taking the time to visit with the Maria Sanchez Show on LATalkRadio.com. Can you describe, your boyfriend was there. He was volunteering in the medical tents, or he was recruited to volunteer after the bombs went off?
No, he was always volunteering to work in the medical tent. Obviously, he had no idea the capacity that he would be working that day. He thought he was going to be, you know, tending to runners who had cramped up or runners who had been dehydrated. But he was in medical tent B. So he was not at the medical tent that was directly at the finish line, but at the medical tent that was down at the end after the runners finish and they kind of get herded through after they get their bananas and their bagels and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But shortly thereafter, they shut down medical tent A because they thought, you know, that that was going to be a target. So they had televisions in the medical tent, but again, he didn't know. At the first, he thought it sounded like a sonic boom, like mm-hmm. a jet flying over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was tending to runners that were dehydrated or whatever. So initially he was, you know, not aware either. And, but then after the second one, the captain of the medical tent team of doctors said, there's been an explosion at the finish line. We don't really know what's going on, but get prepared. And then,
whatever that means,
whatever that means. 'Cause again, you don't know.
Right.
But, he was fortunate that he didn't have to deal with any, you know, of the legs blown off and all that, because they took those people directly to the, you know, hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But he had kind of auxiliary, you know, people, and, you know, certainly was very, very busy. So it was, and at the time, of course, I know he's in the medical tent. I'm like, oh, my God. But now I'm sequestered and in lockdown at a hotel. He has no idea where I'm at. When I last texted him, I was like, I'm at the finish line waiting for Stacy. Well, you know, the finish line is blocks. You know, that can mean a lot of things.
Right.
And so, and he was too busy helping people, so he couldn't really text me. The phone lines were locked because they thought the bombers might use the cell phones to activate another bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite a while. I want to say at least, you know, 2 hours before I knew he was safe and he knew I was safe. And then we were in lockdown, so he couldn't get to me, and he was very busy. And so it was probably 9 o'clock at night before he finally talked himself into the lockdown hotel and said, listen, I need to get in there. They did eventually. By then, Homeland Security and the FBI and all the bomb dogs and everything were, you know, kind of calming down a little bit. And it was quite a sight. So
what was the lockdown like? Were you in the ballrooms?
Yes, we were in the ballrooms. The hotel could not have been nicer. They were supplying water, and people were sobbing. People were, you know, there was a guy next to me throwing up. There was a mom there. She actually was a guest in the hotel. And I said, oh, you're staying in the hotel. How come you don't go up to your room? And she said, I'm on the 7th floor, and I want to be on the ground floor to get the hell out of here if I have to get the hell out of here.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought, well, yeah, that's actually a good point. She said, I'm a mom. I need to be able to get out of here. And at the time, I mean, we don't know. Are there other bombs?
Mm-hmm.
Are there, you know, I went through waves of sobbing to, okay, I need to get a grip. I need to get a plan A, a plan B. I need to stay calm. Where are the exits? You know, it was just very, it's kind of somber once we were in the ballroom, but everybody's kind of quiet. They did have televisions up, but there's a lot of misinformation at that time, too, because every radio news outlet is kind of sort of reporting some different similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Once I heard about the third bomb at JFK Library, I'm thinking, there's no way I'm getting out of here tonight. Mm.
Now, did you become spiritual at all? Did you?
Well, I am anyway.
Okay.
But I, you know, I went through waves. I kind of went through a roller coaster of, well, I had never been to Boston. I had always wanted to go to Boston. I thought, well, if this is my time, I'm doing what I love. I was here, you know, supporting people, you know, okay. And then I went through, gosh, I'm just not done doing everything I want to get done in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't, why would, you know? And then I went through acceptance. Well, and by then, our phones would work, our cell phones would work. So I was Facebooking. I was texting people. I was, you know, letting them know that I was safe, that I was in lockdown. It was a roller coaster of emotions.
And how has it affected you now, 1 week later?
Well, I didn't sleep really at all last week. Really did not sleep. I flew home Tuesday. I did not want to be in an airport. I could not stop crying. There was a lot of bomb dogs and Homeland Security and all that at the airport when I flew home Tuesday.
Were you scheduled to fly home Tuesday?
I was always scheduled to fly home Tuesday.
Okay.
So that I got no sleep Monday. I didn't even get back to my hotel till about midnight, and then just didn't sleep for obvious reasons. And then just really, really shaken up at the airport. Once I touched down at LAX, I was a little bit better, and once I got back into my routine Wednesday, I was like, okay, back to my routine. Really, though, struggled last week with no sleep. I am purposely not watching the news. I don't want to keep seeing those images on television because mm-hmm. I was there seeing them with mm-hmm. all the blood and people on gurneys and wheelchairs and all that. I don't need to watch it. So I've been instructed by post-traumatic stress counselors to not watch the news.
Good. You're getting advice.
So I'm purposely not watching it. It is a week later. Today we're going to have a moment of silence at
11:50.
Yeah, yep. So I'm going to do that. I am very involved in promoting the Ventura Marathon, which is September 8th. So I'm working diligently to get that marathon up and running so that local runners can qualify for Boston.
Is that going to be an inaugural event?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. So we'll help promote that, too.
VenturaMarathon.com. It's Sunday, September 8th. It will be a Boston qualifier. Again, Boston Marathon is the Super Bowl.
Yay. How nice, Tawny. Woo, you're bringing something great to us. Tani, we're out of time. We're going to put your contact information when we're off there. I'll get all of what you want us to share with our listeners. And again, you'll be visiting with us with the lifestyle. I can't not thank you enough for taking the time to share your firsthand personal experience.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Tani Gomes, and she's a local resident here and an inspiration. This is Maria Sanchez, and you're listening to LATalkRadio.com. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to many, many, many episodes and broadcasts. Hope you're having a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Live every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on the net at LATalkRadio.com and MariaSanchezShow.com.